It is that time of year again, friends. We are opening up submissions for speakers for this year's Podcasting for Business conference. The first PFBCon was in 2022 and came about while I, Tom Fox, and some other friends were at the always fun and valuable PodFest. And we realized that as awesome as in-person podcasting events are, they aren't always a possibility for business owners who podcast as only one of the many, many, many things that they have to do every week. So the Podcasting for Business conference was born, something that was all virtual and all recorded, and designed to fit in and around the work of running a business that so many podcasters are also needing to do. And it's time to start planning this fall's edition. It is one of my favorite things that we do every year, and I cannot wait to get going on this year's iteration. I'm Megan Doherty, the reluctant podcaster, and this is The Company Show, where we talk about how to have a successful podcast when it's just part of your very big job. This year's event is going to be taking place November 14th and 15th with a few special events earlier that week. I'm looking for 10 speakers who can give specific tools and strategies to help people podcast more effectively, profitably, and pleasantly. If you've got a strategy like that that you'd like to share and teach, you can head over to pfbcon.com/apply. That's pfbcon.com/apply. And fill in the form and let me know all about it. Today, to inspire your thinking, I'm sharing several, although by no means all, of my favorite clips from last year's expert lineup, starting with some important advice about titles from Alex Sanfilippo.
And so many of us get really creative, and I'm not trying to be rude or mean, but we get creative and clever with our podcast title. But you wonder why people aren't finding your podcast, because nobody knows what the podcast show about everything is. No one knows what that is. So you want to make it very clear, even in your show title. And you can change your podcast title whenever you want. It doesn't mess anything up. You can do it at any point. There's nothing to it. You literally go to your hosting provider, change it, enter, save, done. Don't like it, go back and change it a week later, right? You can do whatever you want. But the thing is, you want to make sure that your show title describes what your podcast is about so that when somebody's searching for it, one, it comes up, but two, it quantifies the fact that, yep, that's what I just said I was looking for, and there it is, right? And then the other thing is your description. Let your description reinforce the title. Put the keywords in there again. Make sure that people know if they're going to even read it, keep it brief, or at least keep the topic brief. You can add more below it, but above the fold, you want people to basically say, confirmed, this is what I'm looking for, right? The next thing is your actual episode titles. Something I still see people commonly do is they say season 1, episode 4, and they spell it out, right? And then they put the guest name or something like that. That doesn't tell me anything. I'm trying to figure out how to eat healthy over Christmas so I don't put on 10 pounds. And if it says season 4, episode 5 with Alex Sanfilippo, that doesn't tell me that you're going to help me keep weight off during the holidays, right? That doesn't tell me that. But if it says how to make sure you don't put on weight during the holidays, that's exactly what I'm searching for and looking for. So you want to build things that have the exact words that people are searching for. So you want that to be in the episode titles and the episode descriptions. Again, the description helps it rank because you can use a keyword, but also reinforces it. So if I'm somebody who's like looking at them, like, I might click the description and I'll read the first couple sentences. That's all I'm going to read. I'm not going to read all of it. Read the first couple sentences and be like, yeah, it's exactly what I'm describing. Listen, I'm going to hear that out. This right here, along with finding one new listener every day, is the greatest way to grow your podcast.
Now, I know that you've received a bad podcast pitch in the past, one that could have been sent to absolutely any podcast under the sun and probably was. That kind of pitch doesn't fly at the Podwise group, where Angie Trueblood emphasizes low-risk pitches with a focus on the topic that will matter to the host and their audience, not just a list of the potential guest's accomplishments.
Oh, I love that you said you don't come on too strong. Carol Cox told me years ago that the reason she loved our pitches is because we always give the host an out. So contrary to typical sales coaching, where you want to use like really closing words, we use words like we have a client who might be a good fit as a guest on your show. Like, we always give the host an out because we recognize it's their decision to make on whether or not this topic and guest is a fit for them, that they know their podcast more intimately than we do. So that's first of all around the language. The pitch for us, it's far more important, the topic that we are pitching, than anything that we are including about the guest. And that's where we kind of blur the line into, we're almost like content creators and content strategists, really figuring out, well, what's the topic that's going to resonate with this host's audience that also highlights me, my business, and my expertise. So if you can come up with a really compelling topic, then you just sprinkle in a couple of like credibility markers, like, oh, I have a podcast, or I've been in business this number of years, if you've won an award. But really, that part of it should take maybe two sentences. The whole pitch is really not about you as the person. It's about what you can bring to that show. And we will put our new, this has been a couple of years we've done it, we'll put their full bio, but at the very end. So basically, after we sign off, we're like, okay, here's more info if you want it. But we didn't want to fill the pitch with that.
Now, there is nothing wrong with approaching your guest list strategically and deploying the content that you create as a part of it throughout your business. Atiba D'Souza approaches all areas of his podcast and his business with an eye to creating win-win situations as efficiently as possible. Here's how you can use your podcast to increase the know, like, and trust factor to hurry up your sales cycle a little bit.
So we are a video content marketing agency. Our entire goal is to help you shorten your sales cycle using video, okay? Now, what am I talking about here? What I'm talking about is the fact that your ideal customer is trying to build a relationship with you before they ever actually come see you, before you even know they exist. They want to feel like they're in a relationship with you. Now, we've all heard this before, and we call it know, like, and trust. Yes, they want to build know, like, and trust. Guess what? That's building relationship, right? How do you build relationship with someone? You go through things with them. You ask them questions. And your ideal customer is doing the exact same thing with you. They're going to Google and asking questions and hoping that they get an answer. Well, guess what? If you answer it, then you have any opportunity to build relationships. So that's what we help you do. We help you find those questions that your ideal customer is asking and then answer them and position them on Google search so that you can be found by your ideal customer. They can build a relationship. And let me tell you what happens. Okay. So for example, we had a doctor who said, oh my gosh, I just made the easiest $26,000 sale I've ever made. Because people come in and they feel like they know you, they feel like they love you, they trust you, and they're ready to go. And that's the beauty.
One of the most popular event types we had at last year's PFBCon were the Ask the Expert sessions, and Danielle Desir Corbett generously gave a whole hour of her time during one of them to answer all of our questions about SEO for podcasts. Here's one of her tips about YouTube and how it should be a part of your strategy.
So I've noticed the blog posts that have no YouTube videos versus the one that do have YouTube videos, there's a difference. The one that does have these videos typically performs better. And those episodes typically have more plays because people, it's now in a different place, right? It's more visible out there. So even if you don't produce videos, I do not produce videos, I still take that audio video and I put it in my show notes to have that SEO Google juice. So you could still leverage and use that. Imagine if you don't have that capability with your hosting platform, you can still look for within YouTube, a related video. Maybe your guest has a YouTube channel. Take that video and put it into your show notes. When you have your own SEO checklist, your show notes checklist, YouTube videos are always on mine. So I'm either looking for a video I can put on that it's mine or a guest or something related that I think is relevant. Because again, I just want to benefit from having YouTube's product on my page and for Google to be like, oh, that's cool. Awesome.
Next up, we've got Jeremy Enns, who is one of the best podcast marketing strategists working today. He posits that it's often easier to get a new email subscriber than a podcast one, but you can marry those two processes in your marketing.
For me, it's usually email. It's much easier to get a newsletter subscriber than it is to get a podcast subscriber. And then once they're on my email list, then I can present them with an ongoing feed of episodes that may be interesting to them. And if I start to collect any kind of like segmentation data, then I can, you know, if on my initial signup form, it says, what's your biggest podcasting challenge right now? Somebody says, I want to get sponsors for my show. Then in a welcome email, I can say, hey, here are three episodes, my favorite three episodes on getting sponsors for your show. And now this person who's just signed up for my email list, they've got a curated feed of episodes that are highly relevant to them. That makes it much more likely that they are going to listen to the show in the first place, have a positive first impression of the show, and keep coming back. And so for me, email, especially for business, email is like really at the core. And so if we're going to be wanting to getting people on email anyways, I feel like it's easier to get people in there and then get them into the podcast after the fact than by trying to promote the podcast, which is probably the hardest thing we can get people to take action on of anything in our content ecosystem as our main kind of promotional focus. And then the second thing, once we have developed our system and our strategy around that, the next step is to look at borrowing and leveraging other people's audiences. And so finding other brands, creators that have significant overlap or complementary audiences to ours, and then partnering up with them. And this could take many forms, could be promo swaps or feed drops or guesting, lead magnet swaps. There are near infinite ways to collaborate with other people. Kind of the limits are your creativity, but we can kind of leverage all of those. And if you can do this, this is really the only strategy that you need, in my opinion, is collaborations, and that you can build your entire marketing strategy around that forever.
Now, we've all been in a situation where an amazing guest doesn't quite get the question we were asking and maybe gives an amazing answer to something a little different than you'd intended. When that happens, Liz Covert recommends just re-recording the question and letting the guest shine with their expertise. Her presentation last year on how to interview experts was an attendee favorite.
I would not be afraid to re-record some of your questions if you need to. Now, you do get into a thing, we re-record all our questions because we always have to re-record one, because you asked a question, the guest answered something completely different. And it's genius, right? But the question you asked does not make sense for the answer they gave. So we may have to insert one or more questions, and you do want them to sound somewhat similar. You don't want to sound that all the time, but there are earlier examples on the podcast where you can hear I re-recorded one or two. And the best way to do that is to record it in the same space with the same equipment that you use to record the interview. I also wouldn't be afraid to move your material around. So I told you that sometimes our guests bring up technical language. So with the task and gang system of slavery, that just came up in a conversation. And the scholar just mentioned, like, oh yeah, the task system of slavery, blah, 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 and went on. And then my immediate follow-up was, you know, for those of us who can't quite remember our textbooks, could you explain to us what the task system of slavery was? And in that particular case, what I did was I took her answer and then inserted it in the original answer. So when she said task system of slavery, and it said something which is, and gave you the definition, and then listeners could follow along with the original answer. And I just cut that extra question out. And sometimes you just can't because of the way the conversation added, but don't be afraid to ask and leave that follow-up question in to make sure that listeners are really understanding what the guest is trying to convey to them.
Finally, here's a note from the compliance evangelist himself, Tom Fox, that exemplifies just how much you can do with podcasting when you're willing to experiment with the model and take chances on different kinds of niching and structure.
What we wanted to do was see if there's a different economic model that can be used for a rural podcast network. But when, as we've gotten into it for the past year, we realize that it can be used literally for any distinctive network. So our closest town is San Antonio, Texas, or our closest city, I should say, is San Antonio. So you could use the same model for a San Antonio podcast network. You could add a podcast movement event. I met a woman who used this model, and it's where I got my idea from. She had one block in Brooklyn that she had a podcast network around, and it was all B2B, all businesses, but they were consumer-facing business. So can work with her in a wide variety of geographic models. The prior economic model for a rural podcast network was to have one major or mega podcast, and whatever the topic might be, hunting, fishing, farming, wineries, birding, you name the topic, golfing, that would basically pay for the entire network, and you would have more pods built around that. Well, we didn't think we were going to have that sort of national or international podcast out of Kerrville. So what we decided was to try something different. So as Andrew said, we founded this in October 2022. We started with three shows. We now have 12, and we have 1,700 subscribers to the network. The significance of that number is there's just over 20,000 people in our hometown. And the newspaper that I'm going to talk about, we have a three-day-a-week newspaper, has 3,000 subscribers. So we are fully half of what the newspaper is in 1 year in terms of subscribers. This is a list of our podcast network. And I put this here to show you really the breadth and scope. I've said this many times, and I will say it at the end of this presentation. In podcasting, the only thing that you are limited by is your imagination.
I hope this has got all of your creative juices flowing. And if you have some important learning or an idea or a strategy for a community of business owners, experts, service providers, marketing managers, and directors, I want to hear what you've got in mind. If you'd like to speak or present at the Podcasting for Business conference, you will find all of the details and how to apply at pfbcon.com/apply. That's pfbcon.com/apply. Applications are going to be open until July 31st. Please tell your friends. And while I'm asking for favors, you may know already that I've written a book called, shockingly, Podcasting for Business. It's going to be releasing in early September this year. This is a project that has been years in the making. We have completely codified the business podcast blueprints and created a handbook that you can use to design or refine and optimize a podcast to bring real bottom line value to your business. What you don't know yet is that I'm going to give an absolutely free PFBCon Podcasting for Business conference ticket to every single person who pre-orders it. Hopefully this is something that you think would be of value for your community that would help them get more out of their podcast. And so you can find all the details about that also on the pfbcon.com/apply page. And if you want to talk in detail about maybe a co-promotion or getting in on what could be a pretty cool opportunity to make the conference really accessible and available to a lot of people, you can contact me through any contact form at podcastingforbusiness.com or find me on LinkedIn. Link is in the show notes. Let's talk about it. Next week, we are going to be back with another episode talking about sponsorship and what you need to know if you're going to try and monetize your show or anything else via those means. Until then, I've been your host, Megan Doherty, and The Company Show was produced by the whole team at One Stone Creative. If you found some value here today, the best way you can support the show is to share it with somebody that you think should have a podcast. Till next time.